Straker, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, Ms. Osborne, my name is Bernard Straker, and I work in the Scottsdale County Public Defender's Office. I guess before I say anything, I'd just like to thank the court and Ms. Osborne for letting me come here today to talk about Mr. Becker. Back in 2017 and 2018, we were appointed to provide Mr. Becker with legal representation in several cases that were filed in the Scottsdale County Court and the Scottsdale County District Court. These cases all seemed to be based on problems that Mr. Becker was having with his fiance girlfriend at the time. By the time late May of 2018 had rolled around, a case was filed in Scottsdale County Court, and the complaint charged Mr. Becker with 21 counts of second offense protection order violation, so class 4 felonies. At the time of the preliminary hearing, the state offered to Mr. Becker that he could plead either guilty or no contest to each of those protection order violations, the underlying offenses, and the state would promise not to enhance those to felony convictions. Mr. Becker agreed to that. He entered his pleas. His pleas were accepted. County court ordered an updated pre-sentence investigation report and also indicated that it wanted an updated victim impact statement. Matter was set for sentencing, and on July 31, 2018, Mr. Becker appeared for sentencing, and he was sentenced to serve terms of 6 months imprisonment on each of these charges. He was given 26 days credit on one of the counts. The counts were all ordered to be served consecutively, and he was ordered to pay court costs. An appeal was prosecuted to the District Court, Scottsdale County District Court, and the sentence was, in all respects, affirmed. And Mr. Becker then perfected his appeal to this court. Mr. Becker brought three issues in the district court on his appeal, and he brings those three issues to this court for consideration. They involve the excessiveness of the sentences that were handed down by the county court, issues regarding Eighth Amendment violation and some irregularities that occurred during the sentencing process. We all know that the basic rules regarding the imposition of sentences in Nebraska are relatively clear and have been stated many times by the appellate courts of the state. Judges are permitted to exercise their discretion in imposing sentences. Judges should consider the defendant's age, mentality, education, and experience, social and cultural backgrounds, past criminal record, motivation for the offense, nature of the offense, and amount of violence that was involved in the commission of the crime. We all know that judges also make subjective judgments in imposing sentences. They can observe a defendant's demeanor, his actions in the courtroom, and can rely on all facts and circumstances surrounding the defendant's life. We also know that when sentences are appealed, that a sentence will not be disturbed if it's within the statutory limits unless it amounts to an abuse of discretion.
For each of these convicted counts, the maximum penalty would have been 1 year?
Yes.
And the sentence on each count was 6 months?
Yes.
So it's right smack in the middle of the of the statutory range.
Right.
So I take it your complaint about excessiveness or abuse of discretion relates to running the sentences consecutive?
Well, I think that, and also maybe the nature of the crime and sort of the bizarre circumstances that brought this all to the court's attention.
Do each of the convicted counts relate to a separate event in the sense separate date or occurrence?
I think the way they were set out was it was a 21-day period, I think, from May 3rd or May 4th, 2018 to May 25 or May 26. Yeah, well, there was one count for each day.
So is your real problem that this is going to be served in county jail?
Well,
Is this a sentence to over 10 years in the county jail? Is that
basically
what
we're talking about? Basically, it is. Yeah, he got sentenced to basically 10 and a half years in the county jail. He was, if he gets his good time and his credit for time served, he might do just under 5 years and 3 months.
Is your claim that where it's served in county jail is erroneous or at issue with any statute?
I think our, well, no, because the statute, I guess, is pretty clear that, that misdemeanor sentences have to be served in the county jail unless there's a felony along with it. I guess our concern is, again, the man was in jail, he'd been in jail for 7 months, and he was making telephone calls to his girlfriend. Now that's in violation of the protection order, but he's in jail making these telephone calls, and granted there was a large number of them that were made. They have the ability now to record the phone calls, review all the phone calls that come out of the jail, and I know he made a lot of phone calls, but to sentence a guy to 10 years in jail for making phone calls, I just think is excessive. And that's our primary concern in this case.
Were some of the calls of a threatening nature?
I would say that some of them were disparaging, and I think some of them probably could have been taken as threats. And certainly some of those calls that there was discussions about are disturbing. They are disturbing. And I think they were disturbing to anybody who listens to them.
Had they been considered witness tampering? Was there any intimidation, requesting her to change her testimony or what she's going to tell the court or anything like that? Could you charge him with a class 4 felony on multiple occasions?
Well, I don't know if they would have been witness tampering because he entered his plea, you know, right away. And, you know, and he had entered those pleas, you know, fairly early on, I think within a week after he was charged. So,
but by then, the calls had already occurred.
Right, right.
After the plea was accepted by the court, didn't the court admonish the defendant to knock it off? And what happened then? How many more calls were made?
He continued to make the phone calls, and they continued to pile up. Sometimes there were several of them a day. But each one of these phone calls are made. There's a recording that comes on, and it tells the person being called, if you don't want to talk to him, push a button or hang the phone up. And many of those calls, that's what happened. There were many calls where they did communicate with each other. I know there were some that were bad things were said, and there were probably some that weren't all bad. And and that's why it's so bizarre. The telephone system in the jail, as long as you have money, you can pretty much call anybody. And the system is set up specifically designed so law enforcement and prosecutors have direct access to those phone calls. And unfortunately, I don't think Mr. Becker was thinking about those things when he was making those phone calls.
Did you want to discuss your commitment issue?
You know, the statute pretty much governed, you know, where he was going to be serving his time.
I mean the timing of the order.
I'm sorry?
The timing of the order, when the order was issued.
Oh, well, the only thing I would say is that, you know, he got let out of the courtroom knowing that he was going to have to serve 10 and a half years for 21 misdemeanors. And he didn't know where he was going to be serving it at, for sure. Now, maybe he had an idea because the judge did review the statute there in the courtroom but wanted to research it further. I think the statute pretty much answered the question. and...
The county judge couldn't have sent him to the Department of Correction, as you conceded.
Right.
And don't we have quite a bit of case law that says a written judgment can correct an error in a oral pronouncement?
Right.
So that's sort of what happened here?
I think so. And I think there was just maybe some question as to what, where those sentences could be served was raised, and I think it was pretty much answered there during the, you know, during the actual sentencing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See, I'm out of time. I just ask the court to consider Mr. Becker's claims and reverse the ruling of the county court and ask the court to impose sentences that are fair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stricker, and thank you for your service. Ms. Osborne, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Jordan Osborne, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state of Nebraska. Becker alleges errors as to his sentences only, and since the majority of the conversation thus far has been about the sentences, I'll begin with the Eighth Amendment issue. The argument there is that the sentences were imposed amount to cruel and unusual punishment, as they are grossly disproportionate to the number of offenses that have been that he has committed in the past, and that they are disproportionate to the crimes committed in this case. So the applicable analysis here is the severity of the offense and the sentences imposed. The Eighth Amendment does not require strict proportionality, but forbids only extreme sentences that are grossly disproportionate to the crime. So obviously there's some discussion about the facts, and there's been some discussion thus far about what actually happened in this case. And so on May 3rd, 2018, the defendant is convicted of his first violation of protection order, which is a separate case. It's against the same victim. That protection order has been in place for a lengthy period of time since the previous fall, and he had been in custody for several months for assaulting that same victim, third degree assault of a pregnant woman, which is a class 3A felony. He was convicted of that offense, sentenced to 270 days imprisonment on that case. So he's clearly aware of the prohibitions of this protection order. He knows that he can't be contacting her. He knows he can't be calling her because he's in fact serving a 6-month sentence for having done just that. And at that point, he begins serving that sentence the next 21 days. He's calling her every single day, multiple times a day, hundreds of phone calls. From February of 2018 to June of 2018, he calls her at least 938 times from the county jail phone system. The behavior here is just incessant and relentless.
What does the record tell us about whether these were threatening or merely annoying?
Well, there are a few phone calls where he makes a couple of what I would characterize as threatening comments to the victim, and that's included in the state's brief, the details of what he said, and there's also some audio recordings, some exhibits that were offered at the sentencing hearing that's also contained within the record. The effect that this had on the victim is also contained within the record. There is an exhibit that was a sentencing exhibit that's in the record of the victim's impact statement. The effect of the offenses on the victim contained within the record, she describes the emotional trauma that the defendant inflicted on her as life-altering. And there's much more detail in her letter, and I would refer you to that exhibit. But certainly, she characterized and her feeling of the phone calls was very problematic in her own life. It was very destructive to her personal existence on a day-to-day basis. So all of that goes to the severity, the nature of the offense conduct involved in this case, which is pretty severe given the charge that we're talking about. Insofar as he's arguing that the consecutive nature of the sentences is what makes it grossly disproportionate or excessive, either of those arguments, that at least as to the Eighth Amendment, that has been repeatedly rejected, particularly in the federal system. Several courts have held that it's inappropriate to treat a cumulative punishment as a single sentence under the Eighth Amendment analysis. And that rationale is really very clear, that if it's only grossly disproportionate because somebody has committed several offenses, then they, in fact, are rewarded for their recidivist behavior. If a defendant has subjected himself to a severe penalty, it's simply because he has committed a great many offenses. And that's exactly what has happened.
Is there some problem with being sentenced to 10 years in a county jail?
Well, the statute requires that it be in the county jail. These are all misdemeanors. There's no felony involved here. The legislature has dictated that when you have misdemeanors, they must all be served in the county jail. So there's no discretion. There's no judge that could have sentenced him somewhere else.
Which statute are you primarily relying on?
Well, that would be 28106 subsection 2.
The time is in county jail unless there's a felon, you're in DCS with a felony and so forth.
Correct. LB 605 changed the rule the way that it used to be. Misdemeanors could be served in the Department of Corrections if they were a year or more. LB 605 changed that in 2015. All misdemeanors must be served in the county jail unless there's also a felony connected to it. There's no felony in this case, so the court has no discretion here. Becker's not alleging that statute is unconstitutional. There's no claim as to that, which it appears would be an as-applied claim, but that does not exist in this case. He hasn't assigned it. He hasn't argued it. There's no 9E notice. So the statute itself is not being argued as unconstitutional. The court had no discretion.
How do you read the record of at the sentencing of what the county court said with respect to where the sentence would be served?
Yes.
Was that pronounced or
no,
indicated?
How do you see the record? He did not pronounce where the sentence would be served. There was a discussion on the record. And that goes to the last assignment of error here, where we have State versus Ernest. It does require the defendant's presence at a sentencing, and that is to allow for the statutory right to allocution, which the state does not disagree with.
Does that include a pronouncement about where the sentence would be served?
I do not believe so. The location of where a sentence is not a substantive part of the sentence. The sentence itself is the sentence. Where it will be imposed is contained within the commitment order that's sent to the sheriff, directing the sheriff where to take the defendant for imposition of sentence.
Pursuant to the commitment statute.
Correct. And at the hearing, the court inquired of the parties, where does the statute allow me to send the defendant or have him serve this sentence if it's for more than a year? Both attorneys were not certain, but they both seemed to believe that there was statutory authority for the court to direct that the sentences be served at the Department of Corrections. Well, that would have been true prior to LB 605, but that was not accurate at the time that this sentencing occurred. So the court seemed to disagree with that. The court read the relevant statute that I just stated into the record, which clearly states that all misdemeanors must be served in the county jail unless there's a felony. That effectively announced to everybody in the courtroom, including Becker, that his sentences would have to be served in the county jail. The court having conflicting information here, having the attorneys saying that he can sentence him to the Department of Corrections and having a statute that says no, you can't, wanted to make sure that he understood what the statute calls for, wanted to research it a bit further, and directly indicated to the parties that he would sentence the defendant, which he in fact did, and then he would include the location of where that sentence would be served in the commitment order, which he also did. So the fact that it was included in the commitment order, as the district court stated in affirming the county court sentence, where a sentence will be served is provided in a separate commitment order that informs the sheriff where to direct the inmate. As such, it's not a substantive part of the sentence. It just directs the sheriff where to take the defendant for imposition of that term of imprisonment. So the oral pronouncement here, it contained all the required elements. Becker was physically present for the entirety of the hearing, so it doesn't violate Ernest. It doesn't violate the statutory right to allocution. He, in fact, was given his right to allocution. He did allocute to the court. All the other purposes of his presence at sentencing were met. So the sentence itself is valid. There's no Eighth Amendment violation because there's not a cruel and unusual punishment that was imposed. Not only was it within the statutory limits, it was well within the statutory limits. He could have been sentenced to double the 10.5 years that he was sentenced to, and it still would have been within the statutory limits. And this court has stated prior multiple times in previous cases that regardless of the severity of sentence of imprisonment, which is within the limits of a valid statute, ordinarily is not cruel and unusual punishment in the constitutional sense. Federal courts have held the same. So unless there are additional questions, I would ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district court, which affirmed the judgment of the county court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
We do not. The next case of the day, then, is Burgard versus Burgard.